obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
From Hollywood, California, Michelle B. Like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change is gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Hello, family. My name is Michelle, and I am an alcoholic. If there is anyone sitting out there that has a problem with the way that I introduced myself, I would suggest that you get your ass up off the seat that you're sitting on, go in the hallway, and call your sponsor. Because trust me, my dear, it's about to be a bumpy ride. I first want to thank JoJo for asking me to come here today. You know, this is my first time being in San Francisco, and I love it. I love it. I have known JoJo for quite a while, and I have always loved you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jerry, for picking us up at the airport. A little heavy on the pedal there when you was bringing us. It's okay. We made it without getting a ticket. I also want to give a shout out to the next speaker, John. I've loved him for so long. But you see, he has forgotten that he left Los Angeles and went back to New York, but you're still the baby's father. You know, they've given us 30 minutes, and God only knows that I cannot go from the beginning and make it all in 30 minutes. But what I will tell you is in January of this year, I celebrated 20 years of recovery. And on June 16th, I was 67 years old. You see, it's true, black don't crack. I am truly an alcoholic and an addict. I do, I have the greatest respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. However, there was a time when I had to do a little bit of something else, you know, to keep me going. Before I came into recovery, I had, in Baltimore, I met these two beautiful women, and because all of my life I knew how to manipulate people, I introduced myself and we became acquainted. But in becoming acquainted, I noticed that one of them had this Adam's apple. And the other one, when I introduced myself to her, she was like a...
Hello.
Okay, so these were not biological females. But we became really, really good friends, and we all loved to sing. We sent a tape to New York, and we joined this group called the Jewel Box Review. Now, I'm sure most of you do not know anything about the Jewel Box Review, but there are some of you out there that do. And in the Jewel Box, we did a lot of traveling, and one of the things that I had always said, you know, drinking was cool, smoking marijuana was absolutely wonderful, but I swore I would never do any other type of drugs because then you'd become a drug addict, and I just had too much class for that. But when you're in the music industry and you're traveling all around, you know, there are times you get tired, and one of my girlfriends said, well, why don't you try a little of this? This will help you. And of course, being a chameleon and wanting to be loved, I tried it. And I took a one-in-one, and before you knew it, I was over in the corner and I was nodding. And I was, couldn't get my eyes open, and I couldn't lift my head up. And I said, well, what is this? And she said, well, it's just a little heroin. I was like, oh, God. But you see, you can't do that and still make it to rehearsal on time, because if you're late for rehearsal, they will find you and you won't get your money. So the girlfriend said, well, here, try one of this. So, of course, I did it. And dear God, all of a sudden, my eyes got bright. My heart started beating real fast. And I was just running my mouth. And I was going. And I was like, what the hell is this? And it was cocaine. So you see, but you see, I'm a pig about everything that I do. And snorting just wasn't good enough for me. So I learned how to shoot it piggyback style. Every day of my life, that was how I lived my life, drinking and smoking and shooting and doing all the things that I swore that I would never do. But you know, after we, at the end of our tour, we came back and we were doing a show at the Apollo, and the lead singer couldn't fit this gown that they had made, so they asked me to do it, and of course I was shy. And I said, no, that's okay, I'll stay in the background. They said, well, just try it. Honey, I put this red sequence trumpet gown on, and when that curtain went up, I got a standing ovation, and I thought to myself, I have got a gift from God that will keep you away from me so you won't hurt me, but yet I can get to you through a song and let you know how I'm feeling in my heart. But of course, being a diva, my head got big and I didn't need them anymore. So I moved back to Baltimore and I started my own group. But I couldn't make enough money. And it was like, girl, you got to do something. So somebody said, well, why don't you try prostituting? Oh, dear God, no, I couldn't do that. And they said, oh, girl, you know, it doesn't take but 5 or 10 minutes and you get all this money. And I was like, well, maybe I will try just one. The first car I got into was a policeman's. And they gave me 6 months in Maryland State Penitentiary, but when I got there, what they told me was, because you see, I was young then, and I was voluptuous and all that, and they said, don't let them know how much time that you have, and if they ask if you're in a relationship, tell them yes. Well, honey, when they opened those doors and I saw all of these men out here playing basketball, and they had their shirts off, and they were sweating, and they was... And they asked me my name, and I told them, and they said, how much time are you doing? I said, 6 months. Are you in a relationship? No, baby, I don't have anybody. But you see, 15 minutes after that, they had thrown a sheet over my head and put a razor to my neck. And I was raped by 19 men that I remembered before I passed out. And the girls that was on the girls' tiers, they said that there was a whole tier full of men waiting their turn. And the guard was at the end of the gate, and he was not doing a thing about it. But you see, I have a God that loves me and takes care of me. And I met someone there who took care of me while I was in the penitentiary, and I had made him all these promises of things that I would do for him once I got out. And of course, once I got out, I was on the other side of that door. It was like, I'm free now. But you see, you can't do that and get away with it. That's not the way to treat people. But then I thought to myself, okay, so what am I going to do now? I can't prostitute. I've got this disease that I've got to take care of. I've got to live. What am I going to do? Then I remembered that I did go to school and I did get an education, and I started working at Johns Hopkins University. But there were things that happened while I was working there that I had promised myself I would never do. One, I had gone from drinking Cavassier to drinking Thunderbird. Warm. Right out the bottle. I was shooting up using water from the toilet. I was going out at lunchtime to the telephone booth smoking a joint so I could get through the day. When you see at Johns Hopkins, I was a purchasing agent, and this doctor had his secretary to call down to order some mice for an experiment. He had wanted 300 mice. Well, you see, when she called, I was in the middle of a nod, so it was like, I kind of got the message. But what I ordered was 300 guinea pigs. Messed up a $30,000 experiment. So my supervisor called me in the office and she said, now look, you have got to do one thing or the other. You either go away and get some help or we're going to fire you. Well, you see, I was too close to retirement and all I was thinking about was the money. So I said, okay, all right, I'll do it. So I called this 800 number, and the lady took down the insurance information. She called me back, and she said on January the 3rd of 1992, there would be a plane ticket waiting for me at BWI to bring me to LAX. And I said, well, where is that? She said, in California. I said, oh, no. You must find me something here. I'm not going to California. Well, needless to say, when I got off the phone, and I had told my boyfriend at the time that what she had said to me, and needless to say, I was on that plane because I'm here. When I got here, I was only supposed to stay here for 30 days and go back. Sometime within that 30 days, I knew if I went back, I was going to die. I had a drug dealer who lived across the street from where I worked, and he gave me credit. I even had credit at the liquor store. I did not care, but I did not want to die. And when I called my mother and I called my supervisor at Johns Hopkins and told them that I could not come back, they thought that I had lost my mind, and they said, if you really want to go to California, why don't you wait until you retire, and then you can move there. But they didn't understand, you see. We have a disease that unless it's us, they don't understand that we cannot do it. We cannot. Within that 30 days that I was here, you see, I was so grand, and I was such a diva, and I was so scared. When they would bring me food to eat, I would take the food and throw it up against the wall because I was sick and I didn't want that shit. Almost at the end of those 30 days, they brought this nurse in. She was about 4'2". She looked like she weighed about 300 pounds. She was black, and she had a stool with her that she carried. And when she brought that tray in and set it down, I said, I told you all I didn't want this shit. And I went to pick it up to throw it against the wall. She said, that's just what I want you to do. Because when you throw it, I'm going to throw you after it. I looked at this woman and thought about how weak I was. And I said, okay, I guess I'll better eat this food. That was truly the beginning of my recovery. You see, you told me to go to meetings. You told me to get a sponsor. So I did. I went to a meeting and I heard this man speak. And he was 6'2", and he was an ex-model, and he was from Canada. So of course he was going to be my sponsor. Because you see, once he heard my story, he was going to fall in love with me, and he was going to take care of me. And he was going to be my husband. That's not the way this program works, and he truly let me know it. He said, your first assignment is to go home and to write how you cannot manipulate your sponsor. I thought to myself, this man doesn't even know me. But he knows that I'm a manipulator. And so I did what he suggested. And everything was going fine, you know, and I was in this recovery house, and we were all there together and blah, 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 lying to each other, and everything was fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You said work the steps, and we said, yeah, right, we'll work the steps. And the first, fourth step that I did, they might as well had the Mormon choir behind me because it was so dramatic. Because, you see, I had secrets that I had held on to from birth, and I could not let those secrets go. Because if I told you everything about me, you wouldn't want to be around me. You wouldn't like me because I didn't like myself. I didn't like the person that I was. So at 2 years of recovery...
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
At 2 years of recovery, I decided it was time for me to get into a relationship because I was tired of being lonely, and I was around the people that were in the house with me, so I wanted a relationship. My counselor and my friends said, Michelle, you're not well enough yet for a relationship, baby. You don't even know who you are. I said, okay, since I can't get into a relationship, I had heard about anonymous sex. So I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll go have anonymous sex. Well, you see, I couldn't go to a park because I couldn't see my black ass laying across a rock and everybody watching. So I went to this bookstore. I went to a bookstore and I got this little Latino, and he was half drunk. And I said, okay, well, I'll go home with him. So if he starts any shit, I'll whoop his ass, you know, because I can do that. Well, we got to his house, and this little voice inside of me said, you don't belong here. But of course, I didn't listen to that little voice because I knew better. I went there, and I got into his bedroom, and this little voice once again said, you don't belong here. So I told him, I said, you know, I think I'm going to go. You don't have to take me back. I'll find my own way back. He said, you're not going anywhere. And I was like, oh, shit, here we go. And we started tussling in the bedroom, and I made it to the front door, and he had two people there waiting, and one of them took a gun and put it to the back of my head. That was on a Friday evening, and they... They raped me from a Friday evening until Monday morning, and when they put me out of the apartment, they had urinated and defecated on me and put me out in the hallway with no clothes on. I sit in the hallway and I cried because all I could remember was the things that you all had told me in these rooms. But you see, my God was still working because next door this man and his wife lived there, and they brought me inside and they gave me some clothes and they gave me a bus token to catch the bus home on a Monday morning with people going to work and me smelling of shit and piss. And I did it humbly. When I got home, I cried. I swore I was not coming back into these rooms. 2 days later, my sponsor came and I told him what had happened. I started going to therapy and I learned that no is a complete sentence. I learned that I don't owe anyone anything. I learned that I don't have to humble myself to you in order for you to like me. Either you're going to like me or you're not. So anything that I do is not going to make a difference. Since that time, I started working this program 4 years ago. I got a call from Congress in Washington, D.C., where they had wanted me to come to speak before them. I thought it was a joke until I received the plane ticket in the mail. When I got there, I had spoken to them, and the first man that asked me a question, this old man, and he said, so what is it that you want? Well, you see, when he said that, my brain automatically just went on back to Compton, and I was getting ready to tell him what I wanted. but you told me in this program that's not the way to act. So I told him the only thing that I wanted was the same thing that you have. I want respect. He said, well, we're giving you all of that now. I said, if you did, I would have no reason to be here. After it was over, this lady who was a judge, she had given me her card, and she said, if at any time you need anything, her home number, her cell number, and her office number was on there, and she said to call her. That was coming from this transgendered woman who was drinking Thunderbird and shooting heroin. Only through this program was I able to do that. I now speak at universities and I speak at high schools on drugs and alcohol and the third sex. Because you see, there are a lot of young people out there that are so confused. They hear the wrong thing from the wrong people. And if they would just come into these rooms, they would hear the truth. You know, and I hope I get no tomatoes thrown at me for this, but we as trans people are in a category all of our own. As gay men and women, we've had to trudge a long road, and we have come a long way. But as trans people, unless you have walked in our shoes, you don't know. You will never know the things that we have to go through, the words that we have to hear, not only from the heterosexual world, but from the homosexual world. There are so many that if we would all just come together, we would be so mighty. But and within our own group, there are so many that are so jealous. Don't be jealous of me. Don't hate. Let me be there to show you unconditional love. Let me show you that you don't have to do the things that I had to do. You don't have to go down the roads that I had to go down. Just come in here. And you know, once you come into this program, if you feel, because you know, there's a lot. They come in here as newcomers and then they get 30 days and their cheeks start filling out and they still start feeling a little good about themselves and they feel as though, okay, I got this shit now, I don't need you. And they go back out there and test those waters. If you must go back out there and test the waters, if you can, come back in here. But when you hear us say, keep coming back, it doesn't mean keep going out there and think that you're coming back. Because some of them don't make it back. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to die. You may go out there and take that drink or shoot that whatever or blow whatever or do whatever, and you will be in such a state that you will have to depend on someone else to take care of you for the rest of your life. If your higher power is not ready for you to come home, then you are going to suffer. And why suffer when you don't have to? Why do that? Coming here to this conference and speaking before all of these beautiful faces, names that I don't know and I probably will never know, but I love each and every one of you because I know where you're coming from. I know where you have been. And I know that as long as you stick around here, as long as you don't hold on to secrets, as long as you let us be here for you, when we give you a hug, that hug means so much. Because it lets us know it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to come in here wearing a fox coat. You don't have to come in here living up in the hills in some mansion. You can come in here and be from the streets. You can come in here and don't know where your next meal is coming from. But if you come in here, we will give you that next meal. And the only thing that we want from you is for you not to drink or use today, so that tomorrow morning when you wake up, instead of hearing those people in the trees,
I see you know what I'm talking about. You've heard them. If you don't drink or use, you'll hear the birds. And you won't want to throw a shoe at them. You won't wake up with a funky breath, bags under your eyes, laying there thinking, who can I steal from today? Who can I manipulate today? Who can I get over on today? And the first people that we get over on are the ones that love us the best. It's our families. We will go to them and we will steal from them and we will swear to God, I will never do this again. I know of people that their grandparents were getting Social Security checks and they would slide them under their pillow and they would go under there and get them. Before I came in here, I had a lover who was taking care of me and I would steal his credit cards. And the only way this man could keep his credit cards to himself was to put them in his sock when he went to sleep. But you see, I'm a good alcoholic and dope fiend. And I would crawl across the floor with a pair of scissors and cut the heel out. And take them and go get high. And when he woke up the next morning and he would ask me about it, I would look him straight in the eye and say, we have rats, you better call somebody. But you see, I don't have to do that anymore. And neither do you. The only thing that you have to do is to sit here, listen to us, know that we have already been there. When you ask us to sponsor you, I'll say, yes, I will sponsor you, but don't try it. Don't come to me with those crocodile tears because it doesn't work, you know? I got the T-shirt, wore it out. So you can't come to me with nothing that you think is new, baby, because someone in this room has already done what you think that you have done that is so bad that you can't tell us about it. There is nothing that you have done, and I do mean nothing, that you have done that is so bad that when you do your fourth step, your sponsor won't just sit there and say, okay. And? And then you move on. You know, that ninth step, there was so many things that I wanted to say today. But I understand that they're taping this. And my family wants a copy of the tape, you see. And I don't want my brothers coming to burn my apartment down, so. I'm gonna keep it real, but even in keeping it real, you understand where I'm coming from, and I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. I have, you know, I was talking with John yesterday, and we were talking about the things that we were going to say when we got up here, and it's never what we want to say, because we're not in charge, you know? The message that I have given to you today is the message that my higher power, who I choose to call God, has wanted me to deliver to you. Because you see, your higher power cannot come down here and tell you himself. So he allows the angels, and believe it or not, I am an angel. He has us to come and to deliver the message to you. This has been so wonderful. This has been, it's truly an honor. It is always an honor for me because, you know, today I have no secrets. So I can get up here and I can tell you about me and you can walk out that door and you can talk about me all you want to. But you know what? The last thing that you will say about me is that she was a proud black transgendered woman. Thank you.
this recording. 15 additional copies. Receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks. Or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308. Or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.